Chapter 13. Cut adrift, the six jolly fellowship porters, already mentioned as a tavern of a dropsical appearance, had long settled down into a state of ale infirmity. In its whole constitution it had not a straight floor, and hardly a straight line, but it had outlasted, and clearly would yet outlast, many a better trim building, many a sprucer public house. Externally, it was a narrow lopsided wooden jumble of corpulent windows heaped one upon another as you might heap as many toppling oranges, with a crazy wooden veranda impending over the water. Indeed, the whole house, inclusive of the complaining flagstaff on the roof, impended over the water, but seemed to have got into the condition of a faint-hearted diver who has paused so long on the brink that he will never go in at all. This description applies to the river frontage of the six jolly fellowship porters. The back of the establishment, though the chief entrance was there, so contracted that it merely represented in its connection with the front, the handle of a flat iron set upright on its broadest end. This handle stood at the bottom of a wilderness of court and alley, which wilderness pressed so hard, and close upon the six jolly fellowship porters, as to leave the hostelry not an inch of ground beyond its door. For this reason, in combination with the fact that the house was all but afloat at high water, when the porters had a family wash, the linen subjected to that operation might usually be seen drying on lines stretched across the reception rooms and bedchambers. The wood forming the chimney pieces, beams, partitions, floors, and doors of the six jolly fellowship porters seemed in its old age fraught with confused memories of its youth. In many places it had become gnarled and riven, according to the manner of old trees, nuts started out of it, and here and there it seemed to twist itself into some likeness of boughs. In this state of second childhood, it had an air of being in its own way garrulous about its early life. Not without reason, was it often asserted by the regular frequenters of the porters, that when the light shone full upon the grain of certain panels, and particularly upon an old corner cupboard of walnut wood in the bar, you might trace little forests there, and tiny trees like the parent tree, in full umbrageous leaf. The bar of the six jolly fellowship porters was a bar, to soften the human breast. The available space in it was not much larger than a hackney coach, but no one could have wished the bar bigger. That space was so girt in by corpulent little casks, and by cordial bottles radiant with fictitious grapes in bunches, and by lemons in nets, and by biscuits in baskets, and by the polite beer pulls that made low bows when customers were served with beer, and by the cheese in a snug corner, and by the landlady's own small table in a snugger corner near the fire, with the cloth everlastingly laid. This haven was divided from the rough world by a glass partition and a half door, with a leaden sill upon it for the convenience of resting your liquor. But, over this half door the bar's snugness so gushed forth that, albeit customers drank there standing, in a dark and draughty passage, where they were shouldered by other customers passing in and out, they always appeared to drink under an enchanting delusion that they were in the bar itself. For the rest, both the tap and parlor of the six jolly fellowship porters gave upon the river, and had red curtains matching the noses of the regular customers, and were provided with comfortable fireside tin utensils, like models of sugar loaf hats, made in that shape that they might, with their pointed ends, seek out for themselves glowing nooks in the depths of the red coals, when they mulled your ale, or heated for you those delectable drinks, Pearl, Flip, and Dog's Nose. The first of these humming compounds was a speciality of the porters, which, through an inscription on its doorposts, gently appealed to your feelings as the early Pearl House. For, it would seem that Pearl must always be taken early, though whether for any more distinctly stomachic reason than that, as the early bird catches the worm, so the early Pearl catches the customer, cannot here be resolved. It only remains to add that in the handle of the flat iron, and opposite the bar, was a very little room like a three-cornered hat, into which no direct ray of sun, moon, or star ever penetrated, but which was superstitiously regarded as a sanctuary replete with comfort and retirement by gaslight, and on the door of which was therefore painted its alluring name, Cozy. Miss Poderson, sole proprietor and manager of the Fellowship Porters, reigned supreme on her throne, the bar, and a man must have drunk himself mad drunk indeed, if he thought he could contest a point with her. Being known on her own authority as Miss Abby Poderson, some waterside heads, which like the water, were none of the clearest, harbored muddled notions that, because of her dignity and firmness, she was named after, or in some sort related to, the Abbey at Westminster. But, Abbey was only short for Abigail, by which name Miss Poderson had been christened at Limehouse Church, some 60-and-odd years before. Now, you mind, you riderhood, apostrophe said Miss Abbey Poderson, with emphatic forefinger over the half door, the fellowship don't want you at all, and would rather by far have your room than your company. But if you were as welcome here as you are not, you shouldn't even then have another drop of drink here this night, after this present pint of beer. So make the most of it. Apostrophe, but you know, Miss Poderson, apostrophe this was suggested very meekly though, if I behave myself, you can't help serving me, miss. Apostrophe, can't I? Apostrophe, apostrophe said Abby, with infinite expression. No, Miss Poderson. Because, you see, the law apostrophe, I am the law here, my man, apostrophe returned Miss Abby, and I'll soon convince you of that, if you doubt it at all. Apostrophe, I never said I did doubt it at all, Miss Abby. Apostrophe, so much the better for you. Apostrophe, Abby the Supreme threw the customer's halfpence into the till, and, seating herself in her fireside chair, resumed the newspaper she had been reading. She was a tall, upright, well-favored woman, though severe of countenance, and had more of the air of a schoolmistress than mistress of the Six Jolly Fellowship Porters. The man on the other side of the half door was a waterside man with a squinting leer, and he eyed her as if he were one of her pupils in disgrace. You're cruel hard upon me, Miss Poderson. Apostrophe, Miss Poderson read her newspaper with contracted brows, and took no notice until he whispered. Miss Poderson. Ma'am. Might I have half a word with you? Apostrophe, deigning then to turn her eye sideways towards the suppliant, Miss Poderson beheld him knuckling his low forehead, and ducking at her with his head, as if he were asking leave to fling himself head foremost over the half door and alight on his feet in the bar. Well? Apostrophe, apostrophe said Miss Poderson, with a manner as short as she herself was long, say your half word. Bring it out. Apostrophe, Miss Poderson. Ma'am, would you excuse me taking the liberty of asking, is it my character that you take objections to? Apostrophe, apostrophe, certainly, apostrophe said Miss Poderson. Is it that you're afraid of apostrophe? I am not afraid of you, apostrophe interposed Miss Poderson, if you mean that. Apostrophe, but I humbly don't mean that, Miss Abby. Apostrophe, then what do you mean? Apostrophe, apostrophe, you really are so cruel hard upon me. What I was going to make inquiries was no more than, might you have any apprehensions leastways beliefs or suppositions, that the company's property mightn't be altogether to be considered safe, if I used the house too regular? Apostrophe, apostrophe, what do you want to know for? Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, Miss Abby, respectfully meaning no offense to you, it would be some satisfaction to a man's mind to understand why the Fellowship Porters is not to be free to such as me, and is to be free to such as Gaffer. Apostrophe, the face of the hostess darkened with some shadow of perplexity, as she replied. Gaffer has never been where you have been. Apostrophe, signifying in quad, miss? Perhaps not. But he may have merited it. He may be suspected of far worse than ever I was. Apostrophe, who suspects him? Apostrophe, apostrophe, many, perhaps. One, beyond all doubts. I do. Apostrophe, you are not much, apostrophe said Miss Abby Poderson, knitting her brows again with disdain. but I was his partner. Mind you, Miss Abby, I was his partner. As such, I know more of the ins and outs of him than any person living does. Notice this. I am the man that was his partner, and I am the man that suspects him. Apostrophe, then, apostrophe suggested Miss Abby, though with a deeper shade of perplexity than before, you criminate yourself. Apostrophe, no I don't, Miss Abby. For how does it stand? It stands this way. When I was his partner, I couldn't never give him satisfaction. Why couldn't I never give him satisfaction? Because my luck was bad. Because I couldn't find many enough of them. How was his luck? Always good. Notice this. Always good. Ah. There's a many games, Miss Abby, in which there's chance, but there's a many others in which there's skill too, mixed along with it. Apostrophe, that gaffer has a skill in finding what he finds. Who doubts, man? Apostrophe, apostrophe, ask Miss Abby. A skill in purwiting what he finds, perhaps, apostrophe said Riderhood, shaking his evil head. Miss Abby knitted her brow at him, as he darkly leered at her. If you're out upon the river pretty nigh every tide, and if you want to find a man or woman in the river, you'll greatly help your luck, Miss Abby, by knocking a man or woman on the head aforehand and pitching them in. Apostrophe, gracious lud. Apostrophe, apostrophe was the involuntary exclamation of Miss Poederson. Mind you. Apostrophe, apostrophe returned the other, stretching forward over the half door, to throw his words into the bar, for his voice was as if the head of his boat's mop were down his throat. I say so, Miss Abby. And mind you. I'll follow him up, Miss Abby. And mind you. I'll bring him to hook at last, if it's 20 years hence, I will. Who's he, to he favored along of his daughter? Ain't I got a daughter of my own? Apostrophe, apostrophe, with that flourish, and seeming to have talked himself rather more drunk, and much more ferocious than he had begun by being, Mr. Riderhood took up his pint pot, and swaggered off to the taproom. Gaffer was not there, but a pretty strong muster of Miss Abby's pupils were, who exhibited, when occasion required, the greatest docility. On the clock's striking 10, and Miss Abby's appearing at the door, and addressing a certain person in a faded scarlet jacket, with George Jones, your time's up. I told your wife you should be punctual, apostrophe Jones submissively rose, gave the company good night, and retired. At 10:30, on Miss Abby's looking in again, and saying, William Williams, Bob Glamour, and Jonathan, you are all due, apostrophe Williams, Bob, and Jonathan with similar meekness, took their leave and evaporated. Greater wonder than these, when a bottle-nosed person in a glazed hat had after some considerable hesitation ordered another glass of gin and water of the attendant potboy, and when Miss Abby, instead of sending it, appeared in person, saying, Captain Joey, you have had as much as will do you good, apostrophe not only did the captain feebly rub his knees, and contemplate the fire without offering a word of protest, but the rest of the company murmured, Hey, hey, Captain. Miss Abby's right. You be guided by Miss Abby, Captain. Apostrophe, nor was Miss Abby's vigilance in any wise abated by this submission, but rather sharpened. For, looking round on the deferential faces of her school, and descrying two other young persons in need of admonition, she thus bestowed it. Tom Tootle, it's time for a young fellow who's going to be married next month, to be at home and asleep. And you needn't nudge him, Mr. Jack Mullins, for I know your work begins early tomorrow, and I say the same to you. So come. Good night, like good lads. Apostrophe upon which, the blushing Tootle looked to Mullins, and the blushing Mullins looked to Tootle, on the question who should rise first, and finally both rose together, and went out on the broad grin, followed by Miss Abby, in whose presence the company did not take the liberty of grinning likewise. In such an establishment, the white-aproned potboy with his shirt sleeves arranged in a tight roll on each bare shoulder, was a mere hint of the possibility of physical force, thrown out as a matter of state and form. Exactly at the closing hour, all the guests who were left filed out in the best order. Miss Abby standing at the aft door of the bar to hold a ceremony of review and dismissal. All wish Miss Abby good night, and Miss Abby wished good night to all, except Rider Hood. The sapient potboy, looking unofficially, then at the conviction borne in upon his soul, that the man was ever more outcast and excommunicate from the six jolly fellowship porters. "You Bob Glittery," apostrophe said Miss Abby to this potboy, "run round to Exum's, and tell his daughter Lizzie, that I want to speak to her." Apostrophe, with exemplary swiftness Bob Glittery departed, and returned. Lizzie, following him, arrived as one of the two female domestics of the fellowship porters arranged on the snug little table by the bar fire, Miss Poderson's supper of hot sausages and mashed potatoes. "Come in and sit ye down, girl," apostrophe said Miss Abby. "Can you eat a bit?" Apostrophe, "no thank you, miss. I have had my supper." Apostrophe, "I have had mine too, I think," apostrophe said Miss Abby, pushing away the untasted dish, "and more than enough of it. I am put out, Lizzie." Apostrophe, "I am very sorry for it, miss." Apostrophe, "then why, in the name of goodness," apostrophe quoth Miss Abby, sharply, "do you do it?" Apostrophe, "I do it, miss." Apostrophe, there. Don't look astonished. I ought to have begun with a word of explanation, but it's my way to make shortcuts at things. I always was a pepperer. You Bob Glittery there, put the chain upon the door, and get thee down to your supper. Apostrophe, with an alacrity that seemed no less referable to the pepperer fact than to the supper fact, Bob obeyed, and his boots were heard descending towards the bed of the river. Lizzie Hexam, apostrophe then began Miss Poderson, "how often have I held out to you the opportunity of getting clear of your father, and doing well?" Apostrophe, Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.